From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. From wars to censorship to cultural issues, you're with Mark Morano and Unleashed on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right. Well, by the way, later in this hour, we're going to be joined by Ryan Fournier. He's the chairman of Students for Trump. We're going to be talking all things electoral politics. We're going to be talking about the State of the Union, Joe Biden's State of the Union, and a little bit more. But first, I wanted to give you some analysis here. This is really shocking. John Kerry, and I covered this last week on TNT, talked about how Russia can improve his image by taking action on climate change. And this is what happened actually to the Taliban in Afghanistan. They took over, I think it was CBS News and their Newsweek, did all these glowing stories about how the Taliban is actually worried about the climate crisis. They're not all bad, as a way to sort of soften it. And this is the way people think. So, but what's shocking about this is that a top Senate Democrat, or a top Democrat, I should say, I think he's in the House, Congressman, has attacked John Kerry for making these comments. And it was Ro Khanna, Congressman from California, and he literally said Kerry shouldn't have said it, owes us an apology. So let's take a look at this. This is pretty significant to have a top Democrat in the House rebuking John Kerry, who stepped down allegedly to work on Joe Biden's presidential campaign. But with people like this working on your campaign, I don't think you need the help. This is clip two.
There's one more thing I want to ask you about, Congressman. The outgoing climate czar, John Kerry, was talking about Russia's bad behavior with climate. And he said this. Listen here.
If Russia has the ability to wage a war illegally and invade another country, they ought to be able to find the effort to be responsible in the climate issue. Russia is one of the largest emitters in the world. If Russia wanted to show good faith, they could go out and announce what their reductions are going to be and make a greater effort to reduce emissions now. And maybe that would open up the door for people to feel better about what Russia is choosing to do at this point in time.
He's saying if Russia were to announce some sort of measure on climate change, people would feel better about the war in Ukraine. Is that a man who's too close to his job?
That's an absurd comment. I don't know what he was thinking, but I can't defend that. That's an absurd comment. Look, Putin's biggest crime is the invasion of Ukraine and in killing innocent people. And to think that if he had better climate policy, that would in any way excuse a brutal war is just foolishness. And he should certainly retract that statement. And I really don't know what the guy was thinking.
Yeah, well, one thing is we won't have to listen to it anymore.
Wow. Democrat Congressman Ro Khanna from California is one of the top Democrats in the House, basically saying it's an absurd statement. He should retract it. I can't support it. Wow. And this is, again, two huge Biden supporters going after each other, at least, you know, Ro Khanna going after John Kerry. It just goes to show you, John Kerry tries to portray himself as some kind of intellectual. I remember back when he ran against George W. Bush in 2004. They came out with showing these tests that George Bush had scored higher on IQ tests than John Kerry. And John Kerry just didn't believe it. He thought he was so smart that George W. Bush could no way be smarter. But they'd found someone from their old days at Yale University. But he says the dumbest things all the time on climate. It's refreshing to see a Democrat finally call him out for some of the nonsense that he says. John Kerry's now working on Joe Biden's campaign. He left the climate envoy officially last day, was last week. Well, this is what they're going to be up against. Let's play clip four, Trump at the UFC fight in Miami, Florida, Saturday night, March 9th. Look at the welcome he gets from this crowd of 50 to 100,000 Americans.
Thank you.
Yes, and I have one more clip of this. Is more of Donald Trump at this fight. You could say, oh, well, this is his base. This is all his supporters. Joe Biden couldn't get a crowd that enthusiastic at a Democrat national convention. And this was, of course, the mixed martial arts fighting that they had. So this is clip five. Here's another part of Trump. Just look at this reception.
With Conor McGregor also making his way to the octagon, the 45th president of the United States of America, Donald J. Trump, flanked by UFC CEO Dana White. In the pageantry is just how big a mixed martial arts fan Donald Trump is. He sits octagon side with the cans on, absolutely loves our live events, and a real privilege to have President Trump in the building at UFC
29. Sorry, that maybe went out a little long, but you get the idea. They love him there. This is the Miss Martial Arts. Joe Rogan was the MC for that, which is funny because everyone Joe Rogan associates with, all of his fan base, all love Donald Trump. And yet he won't endorse Donald Trump for president. It's interesting. I don't know if he's just trying to be independent. It's hard to believe that he at least doesn't support him, even if he doesn't want to endorse him. But this is what Joe Biden's up against. And it all comes down to, as we know, it's not about who can get the crowds, who has the best policy position. It's going to be whether there's election integrity or not. I don't know that enough changed. I've had several experts on this program talking about the 2024 U.S. presidential election. And it comes down to those five swing states and whether basically Donald Trump needs to win large enough where they can't steal an election, where they can't overwhelm the voting with mail-in unverified ballots that we were warned about decades ago, 2005, by Jimmy Carter, former president, and James Baker, senior advisor to Republican and Democrat presidents. We were warned that mail-in ballots, these unverified mail-in ballots were not verifiable, not a way to go. Quest compromised election integrity, and we saw that, of course, in 2020. So let's hope that Donald Trump can win a large enough margin to overcome that in the key states. And, of course, he's already won the ballot access question from the Supreme Court, and they can throw everything. Anyone can throw everything they want at him, you know, accusing him of whatever at this point. It's absurd. No one even cares other than that, you know, people, they turn it into entertainment. And I suppose as entertainment, it's fun for them, like MSNBC. And I'll say this, it's kind of like what happened in the 1990s with conservatives and Republicans against Bill Clinton. I can't tell you how many times the whole Whitewater investigation, the Vince Foster, all of the Clinton scandals. I'm talking about pre-Monica Lewinsky. Nothing to do with Monica Lewinsky. The Whitewater financial, all of Arkansas, the state troopers, Paula Jones, all of those things. Everyone thought, oh, we got him this time. Clinton's going down. He's going down. He's going down. Never went down. There becomes an obsession and you sort of lose perspective. The right is guilty of it, as is the left. Of course, the left takes it to a whole new art form because they have the levers of power. The conservatives and right Republicans never had the levers of power in terms of the corporate and the media and the establishment. And that's the big difference for that. Okay. This is impressive. Senator Tommy Tuberville in the United States Senate. Climate change is the biggest hoax in the world and says 25% of the budget goes to it. So let's take a look at this. Clip one, it is fantastic to see a sitting United States senator talk openly like this. It's time. Clip one.
When you come and hear the presentations, when they come and present to you, is it nonsense? I mean, is it just voodoo?
Oh, the climate?
Yeah.
Oh, it's biggest hoax in the world. I mean, it's all a money grab because I would.
And you can say that objectively. Now, sitting up here and hearing the presentation.
No, I've seen seven.
You came in here with open mind to say.
Oh, yeah, open mind. We come in here at our budgets about near $5 trillion a year, what we run on, you know. We've spent, since I've been here, and I hadn't voted for any of $7 trillion more than that since we've been here, right? I would say 25% of that, Steve, is gone to climate change. I mean, it is the biggest hoax in the world. I mean, you've got this clown, Kerry, that
John Kerry.
He doesn't know what day it is most of the time. I think he's right behind Joe Biden. And, I mean, he's pushed this narrative along with these money grabbers like Clinton and Gore and all the Democrats. I mean, it is all a money grab. This EV car system, you're seeing it now. It's crashing and burning.
And he's got it. This is Tommy Tuberville, U.S. Senator, nailing it. The EV, the idea that the spending, the inordinate amount of spending that the United States is committing to fighting climate change is a hoax. And reminiscent of Vivek Ramaswamy, not Vivek, Vivek, like cake. So I'd love to see it. He's from Alabama, Senator Tommy Tuberville, and just fantastic take. This is the kind of messaging we need. We can't have these mealy-mouthed Republicans. As I was talking to CEI Darren Baxt last hour, what is going on? There's a whole coalition of Republicans. The Climate Solutions Caucus, ooh, we care about climate change. We want to appeal to young voters who've been indoctrinated since kindergarten. We don't want to lose their vote. So we are going to pander to bullshit and talk nonsense about planting trees and capturing carbon and not going as extreme as the Green New. We want a Green New Deal light. Yeah. What a winning ticket. I will take Tommy Tuberville's climate change as a hoax message any day, hands down. All right. On the same token, as I've mentioned on this show many times on Unleashed here on TNT, the Republican governors and attorney generals are the ones truly fighting this administrative state agenda, corporate government collusion. Environment, social governance, ESG, is now under severe difficulty. Public relations, business. This is clip three from Yahoo Finance to explain more about what's going on with environment social governance, which is designed to limit funding to fossil fuel and base it on all these other criteria, identity politics and transgenderism, et cetera. So clip three.
ESG investing seems to be getting a new look as the trend faced growing political criticism, but it seems there's still a lot of excitement focused on the E in ESG, just under a new name, transition investing. BlackRock, the world's biggest asset manager, has been pumping billions into clean energy companies and infrastructure projects. Its former chief investment officer of sustainable investing is joining us now, Tariq Fancy. Thanks so much for being here. So as we look at the sort of rebrand that this has been getting, I guess, first of all, are you surprised by it, that sort of the industry has seemed to sort of bow to the backlash?
Not really. I think the backlash just expedited a process that was probably going to happen anyway. Because the way to think about ESG is that it's an acronym that was created out of a report in 2004 called Who Cares Wins. And it was sort of a UN-affiliated report that made the argument that companies that are responsible will also perform better. Like, think of it like a competitive sport where you say that, you know, the clean players will also do much better and score more points. In practice, you're just lumped together a whole bunch of ideas that are not that similar in practice, right? Gender policies, board composition, carbon emissions. And it was largely sort of intended to, you know, attract progressives. And I think on the backlash of on the back of a backlash against greenwashing, which came from the left, and a backlash against politicizing investment processes that are governed by legal obligations like fiduciary duty coming from the right, this is a natural transition where you just kind of take the parts of ESG that actually somewhat do make sense and dispense with the marketing and kind of move forward.
Well, I don't know exactly what's going on here. I mean, they're talking about rebranding ESG. It's transitioning. Is this like a transgender transition? I'm not sure. Keep in mind, what I just showed you was Yahoo Finance. These are mainstream, you know, basically people who are all for it. And they're acknowledging that is the pushback on the right. That's the aforementioned attorney generals, governors like Ron DeSantis and many attorney generals and other governors fighting environment, social governance. And they're fighting it hard, and they're fighting it where it hurts in state pension funds and other ways that saying you can't follow these dictates. And the equity asset firms and the BlackRocks, they're forced to admit they don't even like to use the phrases ESG anymore. And we'll see where this goes. He's saying it's going to be reduced to just the things that make sense. Well, gee, why did we for years have things that didn't make sense in our investing and forced upon us? Why only do things only because of, quote, backlash? And that's what I go back to. We have to resist. You have to fight back. You cannot comply because they buckle. They can't get their agenda through if they meet resistance. Again, in the last hour, the guest was talking about how he can't believe there's not a lot of pushback for the gas-powered car bans. I think he's right. The guest, Darren Bass from CEI, who literally said it's because people don't feel, it's not real yet. You know, it doesn't feel real yet. And I think people still see gas-powered cars. They go buy one. They're not thinking. They see the price is going up, but they don't really know what's going on in the administrative state behind the scenes. Okay. I'm going to show you the next clip. This is the final clip. This is New York City, crime, defunding the police, other priorities, allowing homelessness and drugs and theft and all that to just go completely unpunished and rampant. They've gotten to the point now where they need state police and National Guard in their subways to keep some semblance of order. This is the militarization of America. This is, you know, this is the last stages of an empire. This is clip six. Take a look at New York City subway. Don't get me wrong. If I'm going on the New York City subway, I'd want to see some kind of police or law enforcement presence. On the other hand, this may be part of the Great Reset. This reminds me back after 9/11 when we had the terrorist attacks. Every airport had guys with submachine guns walking around as though that's going to prevent, you know, a hijacker from putting a plane into a building. The problem here is by defunding the police, by making all crimes acceptable and no longer prosecuting shoplifting and small crimes. And that's when I was in San Jose, California. I went in 2019, and then I was there again in 2021. Between those 2 years, the death of George Floyd, defund the police movement, all those soft on crime stuff, it was a different world. My hotel was just a random hotel, had guard gates up, not guard gates, but automatic gates that were sealed. The lobby door was locked. You would go to one of the nicest restaurants that was speaking to a group they took me out to for the speech. And they had signs everywhere. Don't leave any valuables in your car. Your car will be broken into. And they're all just talking about everywhere they go, they leave their car unlocked. They sometimes pop the trunk to save the person trouble. Car, there's no punishment anymore. So what that leads to is complete breakdown of society, lawlessness, homeless people, human defecation, urination, and eventually you need to federalize the police. And then you end up with what you see in the New York City subway. You know, military men with machine guns and rifles standing around, probably not machine guns, but rifles standing around to try to do basic police work because literally the local community is no longer capable of governing itself or policing itself. And this is what they're trying to do is create such chaos, such misery, such heartache, such dire straits that we have to turn to this big, muscular, authoritative central government to save us. That's how they do. Remember Vladimir Lenin, 1917, Russian Revolution, the worse, the better. Chaos is how you drive your agenda. The more chaos, the more people are willing to accept your radical solutions. And that's exactly what you're seeing at the New York City subway. All right. When we come back on Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT, we're going to be joined by Ryan Fournier, American conservative activist, and he serves as the chairman of the Students for Trump. We're going to be talking about Joe Biden, the election, campaigning, election integrity, young people's vote, everything. Stay tuned. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's news talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than a million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small, but they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Caution. You are about to hear
today's news talk and the voice of freedom.
That's what this country's all about.
TNT Radio.
Trump at the UFC. Welcome back. Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We are joined now by Ryan Fournier, who is the chairman of Students for Trump, a national student organization. Thank you so much for joining the program today, Ryan.
It's good to be here with you guys.
All right. Well, just to start with, I wanted to play this clip. This is clip 5, if we have it queued up. Donald Trump's reception, I'll just play the first 10 seconds, at the UFC fighting in Miami Saturday night. And this is a lot of young people. Play clip 5, if we have it queued up.
With Conor McGregor also making his way to the octagon. The 45th president of the United States of America, Donald J. Trump, flanked by UFC CEO Dana White.
Okay. I just wanted to play that clip. That's a lot of young people. That was Joe Rogan was the MC. I don't know if it was 50 to 100,000 people. Donald Trump was cheered wildly. This was down in Miami, Florida. Is what is going on with the youth vote and with that kind of momentum? I hate to say, can Donald Trump win? Because I feel like he won in 2020. But the question is, can Donald Trump win big enough to overcome voter integrity issues and mail-in ballot fraud? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I'll touch on, you know, the voter integrity issues, you know, with Laura Lee Trump. And, you know, Michael Whatley is the chairman and she is the co-chair. They've already created a new division called the Voter Integrity Department. So this is a major thing for the RNC. In the next 8 months, you're going to see a total resurgence from the RNC, not only on getting out the vote, getting the money and to support President Trump, to support his allies that are running for Congress, but also make sure that if you vote, your vote is protected. These are major things that are coming in right now. Laura's pledged to do this. Michael Whatley's pledged to do this. This is good, important stuff happening. But when you look at this specific UFC event, you cannot deny that Trump is a cultural icon. This guy is able to go host a massive rally in Rome, Georgia, with Lake and Riley's family. Thousands and thousands of people turn out to this event. And, you know, for me, it was pretty emotional, you know, emotional watching this because, you know, this family's grief stricken, you know, that they're dealing with so much. And he was able to accommodate them. He signed a wonderful photo for them where he put we just got it today. It was released where he says, "I love you, Lakin," signed Donald Trump. pose with the family, talk to the family for about 30 minutes prior. He held the rally or before going on stage, sort of delayed it so he could talk to the family. You have a cultural icon who really cares. To me, this is the leader of the free world. I don't look at Joe Biden as the president. Even though I respect the office, I look at this guy. This guy is out here changing lives, shaping hearts, and he's going, you know, leaves this rally. You know, I'm sure he's tired, makes it to Miami, goes to this event, and is applauded by all of the thousands of people in attendance. They love him. You got to see the photos coming out of this. All the young people, the streamers wanting photos with him, wanting to interact with him. You got the president of Barstool Sports, Dave Portnoy. You know, one slice, everybody knows, or one bite, everybody knows the rules. He's iconic. People love him. And I think that this really shows the American people that there is a resurgence happening in this country. And it's not only just young people. It's people who are within the entertainment industry. You know, you saw last night with Jimmy Kimmel reading off the truth tweet at the Oscars. You could tell some of those celebrities felt uncomfortable with having to react to that. Margot Robbie was one of them. She was giving the fakest laugh possible and the fakest grin. And I think that's more telling than anything. I think Hollywood's also waking up. They don't like Biden.
Yeah, there's actually, you know, with Trump and African-American vote, weren't some prominent rappers recently come out and supported Donald Trump?
Yeah, there was, her songs are so horrible. Sexy Red was one. I won't even, you know, say the lyrics to some of her stuff, but she came out and support Trump, or, you know, we'll have the endorsement. Meek Mill is another rapper who hasn't officially came out and, you know, said he supports Trump, but he's made a lot of posts that allude to it. Lil Pump, another one. So there's a lot of people out there, I think, within the cultural entertainment industry that are starting to realize that maybe what we voted for and what we thought was going to be a good alternative was probably the bad move, if you know what I mean.
Well, I don't know. Did you get a chance to watch the State of the Union address? I earlier commented that, you know, I worked on Capitol Hill. I've been, you know, covered these things. I've never seen such a vicious, nakedly partisan, even if as a convention speech, it would have been condemned as just too over the top. But for State of the Union, what were your comments on, what are your thoughts on Joe Biden's State of the Union address?
First thing for me, I was disgusted that they arrested a Gold Star dad who lost his son in the failed Afghanistan pullout. And to see the man in handcuffs, I get it. You know, he heckles, you got to get him out of the room. But to have him in handcuffs and then bring him out to, you know, the jail, that was sort of disgusting for me. Another big piece that upset me was Joe Biden calling Lincoln Riley, Lincoln Riley. And then during this, he, you know, for the first time ever, acknowledges that illegal immigrants or illegal immigrants by saying they're illegal, and then backtracks it in a sitting speech the next day with the press, apologizes for saying the term illegal, but does not apologize for messing up Lake and Riley's name. That really burnt me to a core, because it really proves here, this guy's not in control. After that happened, they came to him, they said, you got to do this, you got to do that. And he went and he did it. There's a video circulating today after Joe Biden finished his State of the Union. He's talking to members of Congress, and he said something along the lines of, you know, I had a call with Bibi talking about Netanyahu and referenced Israel and Gaza. And he says, we're going to have a come to Jesus moment. And then his handler taps him on the back and said, you have a hot mic, because the media heard it. So these are things that I think genuinely people see and they start to pick up on, and they're like, okay, is he really in control? The optics were just absolutely terrible. When you have a president yelling at you, it came off as an angry old man. That was the vibe I got from it. It sounded like Adolf Hitler. Donald Trump never does that. You know, he's able to go into there, you know, and he's able to break things down in a way where you understand them, right? Like, he doesn't go into all these complicated terms and stuff. He won't yell at you, but he will give some righteous indignation, right? and he'll deliver a message that you understand and you can take home and you can feel good about. Joe Biden just came off as an angry old man that night. And it was honestly a travesty for our nation. I mean, look at what we're dealing with in this country right now. For you to come off and yell at us and terrorize the entire Republican Party, put us into a corner saying we're the bad guys after we just lived through this, lack of better word, shit show of an administration. Shame on you. Shame on you is what I have to say to that.
Well, Biden's handlers before the State of the Union had said they were trying to get rid of the old man vibe. And so that's why he came out angry and, you know, in his version of energetic, which is just shouting. Do you think he got rid of that old man vibe? I don't think so, because you just kept saying he was an angry old man. And secondly, there's a lot of talk, if you will, in Washington that maybe he was injected or given a little help with some kind of pharmaceutical to give him a little upstream energy. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I saw that the Washington Times put out an article the other day, actually, where I guess they interviewed a couple psychiatrists who, you know, they work in this line of, you know, field. And so they can tell based on, you know, gestures and movements and, you know, how the, you know, the individual speaking, if they're on something to sort of assist in restoring cognitive abilities, if you will. And yeah. They were saying it looked like he was on some type of medicine to help him get through that hour and 10 minute speech. I mean, you know, Stephen A. Smith, right? You know,
yes,
he's always commenting on. Yeah. And I mean, he gave a video today. It's out there viral where he's saying, if you thought this hour and 10, you know, minute speech is enough to get you to reelect this guy for four more years, this 82 year old, and you think he can get over the finish line and go for another 4 years, you've lost your mind. You lose Stephen A. Smith. I don't know what to tell you. It's like losing Charlemagne up in Chicago. I mean, I think truly, like, people are just kind of sick of it. They're, you know, they don't want an 82-year-old man running the nation, you know, especially a lot of progressives. You know, do they want Trump? I don't know. But a lot of them do not like Biden. And so I think that's a big indicator. I think it's going to keep a lot of people away from the polls. I think RFK Jr. is going to take a good amount of the slate, like Ross Perot did, split the vote up, you know, against George Bush. But, you know, it's going to happen. I think so. Hopefully. Right. So we'll see.
Yeah. You know, the RFK question's huge. I think I saw an Arizona poll where it's not quite a three-way dead heat, but RFK is like almost a few points behind Biden in a three-way race there. So, when you have, you know, you talk about Biden's age and people are sick of it. The problem as, you know, Trump supporter or as conservatives is the alternative is most likely going to be Gavin Newsom. If, say, Joe Biden, you know, falls and breaks his hip or becomes incapacitated somehow, would Gavin Newsom be more likely to win than Biden? And is he more of a threat? Because in a way, Biden's the perfect president for today's progressive movement, because he's sort of a figurehead and all the power is wielded behind the scenes. What should we actually, if you're rooting for Trump, if you're a conservative, libertarian, what should you be rooting for? Do you want Joe Biden as a nominee or do you want him to step down?
I mean, I want him as the nominee. That would be the easiest game plan. I mean, the polls are pretty clear right now. You know, we just have to ensure election integrity and making sure that the vote counts. RFK is not a bad candidate. He's picking up steam. And I think that that's going to pull a lot of people away from Biden. You look at the situation in Israel, in Gaza, right? There are people that were walking down the streets of Los Angeles, California, to boycott the Oscars, holding up an effigy of a bloodied, headless Joe Biden. They're carrying the head on a stick, walking down the street, and thousands of people are doing this. So I think this situation too is another, you know, kick in the shin for Joe Biden. I think he's going to genuinely lose a lot of support because of this conflict going over in Gaza. I think he's also going to lose a lot of support over what's going on the southern border. I would like him to be the candidate. I think he will be the candidate. I can't imagine the RNC or the DNC is going to do anything last minute. You know, and the power of incumbency is very powerful. And for, you know, them to go to him and say, you need to step down or whatnot. He's been in Senate longer than I've been alive, probably about as long as you've been alive. He's not going anywhere. These politicians, they don't care. They're going to run until they die. So I have no worry in my mind that this guy's going to get out unless something, you know, tragically happens, you know, God forbid. I would never wish that on my worst enemy. Something tragically happens, you know, he breaks a hip or whatever. I don't want that to happen. But if it did, that might reintroduce the question. And maybe he will drop out. I don't know, but I can't foresee it right now. I know these politicians too well. They're not going to do that. They love the power.
Okay. About a week ago, MSNBC and I think CNN hosts were trying to say that Trump's intellectual, you know, that he's, you know, that he's slipping and that he's too old to be president. Wow. And he's getting confused recently. You know, give us a comparison between Donald Trump and Joe Biden right now in terms of physical and mental health.
Look at the border situation where they were both at the border on the same day. And there's compared footage out there where Biden's walking with the CBP agent, the CBP agents, the border security agents holding his arm. Trump's walking around, you know, passing out food, shaking hands with the troopers, taking photos, giving a presidential speech, a presidential-esque speech on a stage. You have the National Guard General behind him, the governor of Texas. And then you have Biden who, if he wasn't escorted by the, you know, the Border Patrol, I'm confident he might have accidentally ended up in Mexico. That's how open our borders are. So I think really it's just compare the two in a situation like that. They're both at the border on the same day. And you can see, you know, sort of where their mental state is really from instances like that. You know, it's just scary, I think, at this point. I don't like to make fun of Biden. I don't like to, you know, say his dementia or stuff like this. I'm not a doctor, but there's a lot of signs that scare me, you know, as an American citizen, and scares a lot of other people that this man has access to the nuclear launch codes. And I'm not even sure he remembers the national security briefings he receives every morning. It's concerning when the leader of the free world is a veggie tale. We'll just call it that. It's ridiculous. It's like we where the hell have we gone as a nation when we just put these people in office because we hate Trump more than we love America? And you put a guy in office who can barely walk up flights of steps, can't remember basic things, including where his son died, and then can't even say Lincoln Riley's name correctly, calls her Lincoln Riley, as if he owned a Lincoln. It's disgusting. I just don't get it. I don't know where we've gone to as a nation. They hate Trump more than they love America. And it scares me. As a 28-year-old in this country, it should scare everybody. You don't want an 82-year-old running the nation if you've had any family member that you've seen where they've had Alzheimer's, or, you know, they're getting to that point where they're trying to, you know, they're slowing down with the memory and all that. So I don't know. I don't try to go too far into it because, you know, I have respect for the office, and I feel like at this point it's elder abuse. It's beyond elder abuse.
Yeah. And, you know, his wife has to be involved in that. I mean, just at what point, how could he even want to do this? But anyway, all right, we have to take a break. We're talking with Ryan Fournier, chairman of Students for Trump. We're going to talk about the youth vote when we come back. Well, I want to talk to you about climate, energy. I'm going to talk about spending, inflation, economics. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages.
Here's a bushfire fact. Bushfires can occur without warning. So if you're traveling during bushfire season, here are three simple steps to remember. 1. Check the fire danger rating before you go. The higher the fire danger rating, the more dangerous the conditions. It may be safer to replan your trip. 2. Think about the area you're going to and what you would do if a fire started. How would you escape the area if you needed to? And where would you go? Check if there's a neighbourhood safer place. 3. It's dangerous to drive through smoke or fire. If you can't find a way to avoid the fire, park in a cleared area, face the car towards the fire, and turn the engine off. Then lie on the floor and cover yourself to protect yourself from radiant heat. Live bushfire ready. For more helpful tips, visit myfireplan.com.au today.
There are 16 million children struggling with hunger in America. That's one in five daughters, sons, neighbors, and classmates who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Yet billions of pounds of good food go to waste every year. It's time we do something about it. Feeding America is a nationwide network of food banks that helps provide meals to millions of kids and families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to help them feed even more. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America.
When the world's endangered animals need help most, when their lives are at greatest risk, when they would otherwise be lost, the International Fund for Animal Welfare is there, taking action to rescue the animals we love, to protect them and their threatened natural habitats. But the danger to animals the world over is growing, and the need for your help has never been more urgent. On land, you'll help stop poachers from threatening and killing elephants and big cats for the illegal wildlife trade. In the oceans, you'll help rescue dolphins, whales, and seals from deadly hazards. And you'll help rescue, rehabilitate, and release vulnerable animals when disasters strike. Here at home and around the world, we can't do this work without you. See how you can help animals and people thrive together at joinifall.org. From wars to censorship to cultural issues, you're with Mark Morano and Unleashed on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, we're continuing with Ryan Fournier, who's the chairman of Students for Trump. All right, you referenced, Ryan, a little earlier that Trump's pretty much hated by the establishment, but he's actually hated by, I would say, both parties in a way. The Republican establishment, the donor class has gone after him. Trump is vilified and set apart worse than any other previous Republican president or nominee. I mean, if you think back, you know, George H.W. Bush, Bob Dole, George W. Bush, McCain and Romney were in, not Reagan, but the others were all part of the establishment. Donald Trump is different. Why do you think the establishment of even the GOP, the donor class and the Republican RNC in the past has just resisted Trump, hated Trump? What is it about him that they don't like?
Well, it threatens their hegemony. It threatens the gravitas of the system that they created. You know, Washington, D.C., and I learned this very quick when I went there in 2017 to work at the RNC. They're a class of people that have been there for a long time. I was lucky enough that one of my fraternity brothers, his dad was the chief of staff to Jeff Sessions, and I lived with them in Rockville, Maryland at the time. This guy, chief of staff Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, then this guy goes on to become the assistant AG in charge of the civil division after Trump nominated him. I learned very close up front how corrupt DC was. You had a Department of Justice that had bureaucrats that had been there for 20, 30 years who walked the halls of that building despising him, would do anything that they could opposite of what he wanted. That was what we were dealing with. And I got to see that firsthand. And they, you know, that was scary to really see how the government interacts with the president. You know, look back to Jimmy Carter, right? Jimmy Carter is a good man. I will call him a good man because what he did after his presidency, I think that that, you know, shows how much he cared. All the way up until now has done, you know, so many things for people, building homes, helping his community. But the thing with Jimmy Carter that a lot of people don't know, when you look at the back end of his administration, he was a big micromanager. And the bureaucracy did not like that. So they sidelined him in so many ways throughout his term. And that's why his term turned out to be so horrible, because he was just that, he had that personality. And he did not know how to control the bureaucracy. When you look at Trump's presidency, it was not the case. Trump reeled them in. Trump reeled the bureaucracy in ways we haven't seen before. Could he do it all? No, of course not. You know, none of us worked in national politics before when we got involved with this, right? None, you know, when we went to DC, most of us had done local things, we'd gotten volunteers, so we were all learning. But, you know, I look at this going towards the next 4 years, we get this again. It's not going to be like that. This is going to be a much different 4 years. This is going to be a takedown on the bureaucracy, a takedown on the deep state, a dismantling of the culture within the FBI, the DOJ, the CIA, all of these three-letter alphabet agencies. This is going to be sort of a retribution moment for Donald Trump, where he comes in, reels them in, and fix the system. You know, whether it's removing an agency or, you know, modifying and repairing it, that's what Donald J. Trump wants to do. We have a broken system in D.C., and we have to fix it. They do not represent the interests of America. They represent the interests of themselves.
Now, one of the criticisms, you know, from the right, even on Donald Trump, is he didn't always have the best cabinet picks. There was a few, maybe some administration officials who turned against him. He was betrayed. I guess that people always want to be loyal to the establishment because they figure that's right. What's going to reward them long term. But what do you think Donald Trump's learned about picking personnel, especially in this toxic world of D.C. now? What would he do different maybe a second time around?
I think it's going to be a lot of bringing in the people around him now, you know, bringing in people like us. I mean, I've been told, you know, I might end up in the White House, you know, so it's going to be a lot different in terms of we're not going to go to the DC elite, the DC establishment to find people to fill these jobs. There were a lot of good people in the cabinet. There were some bad ones. There were some people that we had, you know, they had to switch out left and right. I think that was a big learning experience for everybody. I wasn't in there making those decisions. You know, I was on the outside running students for Trump, but I think in my eyes, I think it was a big learning experience. I do not believe that's going to happen again. I truly believe he has aligned himself with a lot of good people around him who truly want to make the nation better, who truly want to go in and, you know, just fix the issues. I mean, this is what we owe the nation. I mean, we have an unsecured border, rampant inflation. You know, young people cannot afford housing. You know, rent is skyrocketing across the country. These are things that I think everybody cares about. And it's like, I just don't understand, you know, the love for Biden when everything has just gone so south in the nation within, you know, less than 4 years. We're not even at the 4 year mark yet. And I mean, look where we're at. So I would say 100%, it's going to be a lot different. And I think that when it comes to cabinet, it's going to be some of the people who, you know, were used before, you know, Rick Grenell, people that he's worked with, that he's liked, that he know, you know, they're proven leaders. They know what they're doing. You know, they say what they say. They say what they mean type people. I think that's how it's going to operate this time.
Now, with Donald Trump, you have perhaps unprecedented in American history, a president or former president now, who the establishment has gone after, not only him personally, trying to bankrupt him, trying to jail him, but all his associates, trumped up charges, so to speak. I mean, you have like in New York City, right, for example, the rape charge was literally well out of statute of limitations. And they had the legislator in New York pass exemption just so Trump could be prosecuted. And the lady couldn't even give dates, yep, or anything that Donald Trump could actually check a calendar and schedule, which he would have been able to refute. Or anyway, so they're going after him in ways that are just unprecedented. Maybe the only other nation I can think of is Bolsonaro in Brazil, I think is similar, where they're trying to make him disqualified. Yeah. But the Supreme Court, you know, said they can't disqualify him. This is unprecedented. So why do you think people support him when they hear in the news every day that Donald Trump is, you know, he's a criminal, he's a convict, he's going to end up in jail, he's going to be a felon, and yet his support still seems to grow? What's behind that?
I think what it is especially within the African-American community, a lot of those folks got screwed on drug charges and stuff. You know, when we had a lot of these drug laws passed back under Clinton, a lot of those people got screwed and a lot of people went to jail for, you know, simple marijuana, you know, violations or what have you. And their lives changed. And so when they see Donald Trump, you know, having to be brought down to Georgia, and if you remember the footage, they have the motorcade going through the city. And there's so many people out there, African-Americans, Latinos, cheering them on, like in support of them. because I think it makes it feel to them like he's one of us. Like, you know, this guy was president of the United States and look what they're doing to him. I think that awoken the beast in the nation on its own. I think another thing, too, is that when you look at the fabric of this country, a lot of people under Biden, they don't feel safe. They don't feel secure. They look at, you know, this guy as this decrepit old man, if you will. And I think that that also plays a part into it. One other thing I will say, too, is that I think a lot of Donald Trump's popularity comes from the persecution. You know, for this to happen to a former president, right, just got out of the Oval Office, and to see time and time again, they're devaluing the Mar-a-Lago, saying it's worth $18 million. You got Fannie Willis down in Georgia, who's now getting investigated for all this stuff with her and Nathan Wade. We're seeing the text messages. We're seeing the collusion between a prosecutor and the DA. When you start to unravel this stuff, to the person who has common sense, this is criminal, what they're doing to him. This is criminal. This is abuse of our lawfare system. This is lawfare, is what it is. Abuse of our criminal justice system in the name of lawfare. And I think a lot of people are starting to wake up and see that. You have to remember that the average American usually does not go on X every day. They go to their 9 to 5. They wake up, they go work their butts off. They come home and they watch the news. And the news is nothing but a proverbial curb stomp on Trump supporters every single day. The survey just came out. 90% of all media on Trump is negative. Every day they come home and they see this and they're sitting there thinking, you were beating this guy in, but yet he represented us in ways more than one.
Yeah.
You know, gave us a great economy, gave us more jobs than there were to fill. These are things average everyday Americans, especially in middle America, care about.
Well, you're the chairman of Students for Trump. What about the youth vote? Now, before you answer, I just wanted to mention a lot of Republican so-called groups out there claim that climate's a crisis and Republicans need to offer a solution, and they're pushing some Republican congressmen, in fact, the man who's trying to replace Mitt Romney, is pushing this. The idea is Republicans should embrace solutions to climate change and not resist it and accept the narrative, essentially, that we have a climate crisis. Trump has been unique among Republican presidential candidates in resisting that. But what do you think his appeal is to youth vote, and who will get the youth vote? Will it be Biden? Will it be Trump? Or will it be RFK? I mean, how do you think Trump appeals to young people?
Well, you know, in this race, we don't have Bernie Sanders. I know that he, you know, garnered a very big, you know, margin of the youth vote in 2016. I think a lot more young people are waking up now to the idea of Donald Trump. And it's not necessarily that they're in high school or college realizing that. There's a lot of millennials who graduated, you know, around the time I have, who were not open to Donald Trump. I've had a few friends who have texted me over the last couple of weeks or last year, I can remember, and they were telling me, you know, they were never really big Trump people, but they're kind of opening up to it because they're just kind of ashamed of their nation. I think that when you get out of college and you start paying taxes and you start actually living life, you start to realize that, okay, everything is not the smoke and mirrors that the left likes to put out. You know, I always say this, the Democrats use the college campus as a roadmap to the White House. They go in there, they say all these things like, oh, forgive student loan debt, free healthcare. Sounds great on paper, right? Sounds amazing. But in reality, it'll bankrupt the nation. You know, you can pull it off in a country like Sweden. You know, it's a homogenous nation. You know, it's, you know, they're used to stuff like that. But in the US, it's not going to work. It's our culture, it's different. So, I think, you know, especially when we go to the college campuses now, there's a lot more people asking questions about Trump, like positive questions, like about the economy, about jobs, about, you know, X, Y, Z. It's a lot different now to me, it feels like, than it was in 2020 and 2016. Even online, we look at Students for Trump engagement, and it is off the charts compared to years before. Young people wanting to get involved. So I think it's good.
All right. Thank you. We're out of time. Ryan Fournier, Students for Trump, the chairman. Thank you for joining TNT. This has been Unleashed with Mark Morano. We'll see you next time.